Well, g'day everyone and welcome back to the Hardball Gets podcast, proudly brought to you by the brand new Mazda BT50. It's the complete package. Today, we chat to one of the statistical geniuses of our time as we do some serious number crunching on the Monday Mad Scramble. Let's get into it. Well, it's the Hardball Gets podcast for another week. Thanks so much for your company. My name's Chris Robinson. I'm super excited to chat to our guest today, someone who's right in my wheelhouse with his love and knowledge of the weird and wonderful stats and facts around footy and all things sport. You've no doubt come across his work on Twitter at some point as Sir Swamp Thing. He is the one and only Swamp. Thanks so much for joining us. And how are you, Swamp?
I'm very good, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
Mate, can you sort of, for the people who aren't aware of who you are and what you do, can you sort of explain who you are, what your role is, and why you've become, well, so popular with a niche audience on Twitter?
I probably can't tell you why why the people love me, but or what I do on Twitter. But I'm a statistician in sports. I work primarily in TV. I sort of started in the industry building software to do TV graphics and moved on to the statistical role. So I work on footy or cricket broadcasts mostly, putting prep work together on stats for commentators and producers, mm-hmm. and then going along to games and being, I suppose, the resident expert on site to help out with anything that happens.
Yeah, so some of the great numbers that we see across Channel 7's coverage that the commentators throw out there for the listeners at home, a lot of that stuff comes from Swamp. Tell us about your sort of love of numbers and facts and stats and all the rest of it. How did that sort of come about? Was that from an early age for you, Swamp?
It certainly was. I've always had a bit of a thing for maths. I was always very good at it. I was a massive cricket fan and yep. would watch as much as I could. And obviously cricket, most broadcasts, there's a lot of stats in that. And obviously there was a lot of stat books at the time. That was my fun thing to do, was to get them and actually cross out the numbers and update them with updated numbers as games went on.
Excellent.
I think I was probably destined for this sort of role at an early age. I got into computers sort of as a teenager and then went off and did a university degree. And while studying there, that was when the 1999 World Cup was on.
Okay.
In England. And I got motivated by that series to create a cricket database. So I was using what I was learning in the degree.
Mm-hmm.
Put all those skills together, made a cricket database. And then about 3 or 4 months later, I decided I'd tackle footy as well. So made a footy database and I've sort of been updating and maintaining them ever since.
So what kind of, how, just to the layman out there, how have you set up that database and how do you sort of access the information? Because you do have a wealth of information at your fingertips with all kinds of things like players' birthdays, you name it, you've got it there. What is the setup like in detail and how do you sort of punch in things to access that?
Probably a bit hard to describe it in short terms of how I've done it all, but for most people that, you know, use spreadsheets, they're familiar with how they're set up. My database tends to be something that's more like the equivalent of 100 different spreadsheets that are all cross-referenced to each other.
Right.
And I can build queries to pull out data or match data from one table to another. So I can pull back numbers and facts pretty quickly. And then the rest is just basically up to my imagination of what I can come up with to turn that into something.
Yeah. How satisfying is it for you when you crunch some numbers and come up with something that you go, oh yeah, that's something really nice. That's a nice little factoid. That's a nice little stat. How do you get that sort of buzz? I mean, I do. I do it at a much, much more basic level than you do. But what's the thrill of that like for you?
I do get that buzz. One thing I should point out to anyone that wants to be a statistician out there, you'll go down sort of more dead ends than
yes.
than successful paths.
Yes.
So the successful paths do feel pretty good when you find them. It is a bit of a buzz. I do enjoy the extra challenge that I work in live TV. So there's a bit of a challenge there to try and find these things in real time or as quickly as possible. It is a genuine buzz to sort of find those good stats.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What can you take us through some of your all-time favorites, Swamp? All-time favorite stats, facts, some of the ones that have just stuck in the mind, resonated most with the audience. What can you sort of give us on your Mount Rushmore of favorites?
Yeah, look, I'd be hard-pressed to put it down to one. There was one stat, though, where I did get that absolute buzz of going, yes, this paid off. which I'll give to you. It's there are six players: Mick Irwin, Stuart Glascott, Nathan Van Berlow, Fred Wayne, Greg Wells, and William Young.
Okay.
So these six players, they're all born on the 6th of the 6th, and between them, they kicked 666 goals in 666 games.
That is brilliant. That is simply brilliant. And so how does that get constructed by you, Swan? Is there a lot of trial and error with that sort of stuff? How have you come across that specific set of numbers?
Well, that one in particular, well, it was 6th of June when I found the stat. I just had this idea. I wonder if this is possible to find six players that meet this set of criteria. And so I've got, you know, a table of games that each person's played and all of that sort of thing. So I just had to run the different versions, because there are about 30 people born on that date.
Sure.
So it's a moderately complex query to figure that one out. And did actually take a bit of computer power to do it, but when it came back and saw those numbers, that's one of those true buzzes that you're referencing before.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if it is the devil's work with the 666 there. what other ones have you got for us, mate, in terms of stats and facts that you really enjoyed, really got a buzz out of putting out there?
Well, the one that always comes up in my head whenever I get asked this is one about Diesel Williams, who played five games on March the 31st in his career. Mm-hmm. And on the first one, he polled three Brownlow votes. Three votes in the second, three votes in the third, three votes in the fourth. Then we get to the fifth time he played on the 31st of March, and he touched an umpire and they gave him 9 weeks rather than the three votes.
Those things are probably mutually exclusive, right? You're probably not going to get three votes in a game where you touch an umpire.
No. It's all about umpire appreciation, just from two very different angles.
Yes, absolutely. Any other gems that come into your head?
The one that's a personal favourite is an overly complex one. More about Jared Ruffhead, who back in 2016, as you may recall, he missed the start of the year with an Achilles injury, but then he got re-diagnosed with melanoma, so he had to miss the entire season with getting treatment for skin cancer. Anyway, in 2017, he came back and he played more game time than any Hawk for the entire season.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not an outlandish stat as such, but I always like that one for the message that goes with it.
Yeah, that is a great one. How do you sort of keep, in terms of people coming up to you and asking you these questions, asking you what your favourite stats are and all the rest of it, do you like to sort of keep a bit of an anonymous, I just stumbled over that word, profile in terms of trying to keep the Swamp identity on Twitter?
Well, it's certainly become a thing. I must point out, everyone in life, with the exception of sort of my mum and Bruce McAvaney and a couple of other people, they all call me Swamp anyway. So I don't think most people that I work with know my real name anyway. Okay.
Yeah.
And I probably would have changed my name by Deepole to Swamp if mum wouldn't be extremely disappointed by such an act. When I first started the Twitter account, I think I originally did it because I was coming up with a lot of stats and more stuff than we could fit into broadcasts. And some of it probably wasn't some of the stuff that you would generally use in a broadcast anyway, some of the more outlandish ones. So I went, well, I'm just going to start a Twitter account. I'm not going to put my name on it. I'm just going to see how long it takes people to buy into weird stats from a weird source. And, for about 5 years there, it was a pretty small sort of following. And then I think about 2016, it sort of jumped and it became a bit more mainstream.
There is most definitely an appetite for it, particularly around footy and cricket. I mean, as you touched on, cricket obviously lends itself to all sorts of quirky numbers and facts, but I think there is an increasing appetite from sport fans for it. How much do you sort of relish being a Twitter gun for hire, if you will, with some of these stats? We had on this show a couple of weeks ago, Callum Chambers, the former West Coast and Carlton player, who actually name dropped you during that show, just coincidentally talking about how he hosts some West Coast Eagles functions during game day and sometimes just hits you up for different stats about both himself and Dean Cox and a few others. You're the go-to guy for people on Twitter to say, hey, I wonder if this has ever happened. Can you tell me, Swamp? Like, how much do you relish being the people's champion in that regard?
I don't think of it in those
You terms. Should. You should. You are the people's champion, Swamp.
I'll take that on board. But for me, the Twitter account's more just about me having a bit of fun and testing what I can do. It's almost my version of training. Other people have to go out and run laps or kick footballs. I think up stats. Callum Chambers, actually, he is good value. He regularly comes and asks for the weirdest thing that I can find on players. So it's always good for a bit of a challenge. I do love people coming up with great quirky questions. And I think it's I really do enjoy that. So I try and answer as many of those as I get the opportunity to.
That's fantastic, mate. And the fans certainly do appreciate it. Have you been stumped by any questions where they are quite impossible to answer? Has that ever happened?
I'm sure there are some. Basically, if I've recorded the information, I can generally query anything any way I want.
Sure.
Obviously, there are some things that just can't be done because records weren't kept or records are a bit sketchy. For instance, first goal kickers in grand finals, I've been able to locate, I think I'm up to 89 now, but there's still another 25 to go.
Sure.
So there's those sort of things. But as long as I've collected or maintained that information, I can query it to find what I want.
Yeah. Okay. And have there been any in the sort of Callum Chambers ilk, but in terms of current players or current coaches, has anyone hit you up just to see if they've privately got if you've got anything on them? You don't have to name drop.
I have been contacted by some of the coaches before.
Okay.
Always for something else, but then every now and then they'll go, hey, so what's your best stat about me? that has happened a couple of times, but I won't name names.
That is excellent. That is excellent. You're certainly, your influence is spreading far and wide. I had a couple of questions for you that we flung to you a few days ago, just stuff that I'd thought of that I wanted to know. From a West Australian point of view, I wanted to know which Eagle and which Docker had the best individual win-loss record against a particular club, and which players had the worst record against both the Eagles and Freo. So and I've long been aware of Peter Mann, the fact that the former Dockers skipper, the fact that he had a 0-12 record against West Coast in his career, which I feel like will be hard to beat for a particular player against West Coast. Can you confirm that? Can you tell me anyone who's got a worse win-loss record against West Coast or Freo?
No, I can confirm that one is
excellent.
Is the worst. The next, well, best or worst, depending on which angle you want to look at it, was Jack Watts, who went 0-10 against West Coast.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, there's a few others that are sort of in the 0-9, 0-8 category. The worst record against Fremantle was Rowan Buick, who was 0 from 7 attempts.
Yeah, okay. WA boy against WA club. And as far as the Eagles and Dockers with the best individual win-loss record against a particular club?
Yeah, Michael Brennan is the one with the best record. He played 14 games against Brisbane for 13 wins and a draw.
Right.
So never lost a game against them.
Wow.
There's a few others sort of in that next sort of bit of category. Nick Natt's probably the best of the modern players. He's currently 7-0 against the GWS Giants.
Yeah, okay.
And in terms of Freo players, I think Paul Medhurst is 8-0 against Carlton is the best of Freo's. And I can't remember, I did look it up, but I cannot remember who the current Freo player with the best record is.
Yeah, okay. Paul Medhurst, I think, kicked his career high against Carlton, had 8 or 9 against Carlton one day, I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong. One of the other ones I wanted to know was, I was intrigued by Peter Wilson. So Peter Wilson started his career at Richmond, obviously came to West Coast, helped them win a premiership with his cork in the ocean light kick in 1992. After he left Richmond and joined West Coast, he was a perfect 8-0 against the Tigers from that point. So I wanted to know, is there a player with a better record against their old club after making a switch?
There are two.
Okay.
There are two, yes. And they're both against St Kilda. Russell Green, who went from the Saints in 1980 across to Hawthorn, played 13 games against St Kilda and won all of them.
Wow.
And Val Perovic, who at roughly the same time went across to Carlton, ended up with a 9-0 record against the Saints.
Yeah, but right.
Yeah, Peter Wilson, 8-0, sits in third spot on that list.
Yeah, okay. Excellent. That's great, mate. And the other one that I had for you, which is I'm sure a bit of a simpler one, most disposals in their final game. I was intrigued. So I was doing a bit of a look at the Watermans with obviously Alex starting his career with Essendon, Jake back in the Eagles lineup, and looked at Chris Waterman, who racked up 28 disposals in what turned out to be his final game, and wanted to see how many players have produced a final game with more of the footy than that. Can you give me anyone?
Well, taking out currently listed players,
yep.
there are 22 with a better record.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. The overall record is 37 by Scott Clayton back in 1990.
Wow.
A few other sort of WA based players that were up there was Matt Prittis had 30 in his final game.
He did too. Yep.
Adrian Fletcher had 33. Can I count Sam Mitchell as a Perth-based player? He had 28 in his final game as
definitely,
well. Same as Waterman.
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
That would have been the same. That Sam Mitchell game would have been the same as the Prittis game in the GWS final in 2017, if the memory
2017.
Serves. Yeah.
That is correct. Yes, you are right.
Yeah, right. There you go.
Yes.
The two balls going out together with a combined 58 disposals.
Yes. And I'll make special mention of Michael Barlow as well, who started his career with 33 touches and finished his career, he was playing at Gold Coast at the time, with 35. So he's the only person to have started and finished his career with a 30 disposal game.
Yeah, right. Michael Barlow will absolutely love that stat. I think he's another guy who's hit you up on Twitter a few times, correct me if I'm wrong. And you mentioned before the show that you had a good one about our fellow Hardball Gets podcaster in Xavier Ellis. What can you give me about Xavier Ellis that's a nice little factoid that we can pass on?
Oh, no, look, I'm sure that Xavier Ellis is well aware of the fact that he was subbed out of games 11 times. I think he believed he held the record for quite a while, but it actually belongs to someone else. David Hale has the overall record. In that last finals campaign of 2015, when the sub was in use, he was subbed out in each game. So finished with 14 games overall to take that record.
Yeah, okay.
Actually, it's probably taking me down a tangent. The stat that I most love about David Hale is he was in charge of Fremantle for, I believe it was 42 days. And during his time in charge of the club, he was responsible for more Brownlow medal wins than actual game wins.
Yes. Yes, indeed. So he coached the one game after Ross Lyon was axed where Fremantle lost to Port Adelaide at the Adelaide Oval, and then you're obviously referring to Nat Fyfe winning his second Brownlow shortly after.
Shortly after that, and I think it was then later that week that, that Longmuir was announced as coach.
Yeah, right. Well, that's certainly a record that will be tough to beat. One that's just come into my head, Swamp, I wanted to ask you just your thoughts on something that is tough for me to get my head around now and tough for a few people to get their head around now in terms of the new sub rule and a game being counted for players even if they don't get on the park, like we saw for Sean Burgoyne, for example, yesterday in Hawthorn's loss to Freo. How does that sort of sit with you and does that sort of skew any numbers in your mind?
Look, I must admit it doesn't sit comfortably with me. I actually do feel that if you run onto the ground, yes, that should be a game.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're not used, I don't think it should be. Having said that, if Sean Burgoyne plays every game through till round 11, he'll play his 400th in Darwin on Sir Doug Nicholls' round, and that wouldn't currently have happened if yesterday's match hadn't counted as a game.
Yep.
So I'm hopeful that that particular milestone happens. I think it would be good for football. But it's on a personal level, I don't think you should get a game registered if you haven't actually taken the field.
Yeah, it's potentially going to throw up some quirks moving forward as we go along, but we'll see. How long that lasts for? Have you sort of thought about a few of these implications?
Well, there are some of them. There are players like Oscar McDonald. His average career disposals has gone down by about half a disposal over his length of his career because he's started three games as a sub, so hasn't been able to get on.
Yep.
So there are sort of those sort of things that you have to take into consideration now. So career average is probably just going to have to remove those sort of games, that sort of thing. So there are some complications that arise as a result of it.
Yeah, definitely. And even off the back of the shortened games from last year as well, in terms of trying to normalise those numbers as well, it's been a bit of a tricky 12-odd months for those with statistical minds. Mate, I wanted to quickly touch on the WA team's performance from the weekend. I mean, West Coast obviously making plenty of headlines with the meltdown against the Saints. There were plenty of stark numbers in the second half, particularly of that one for West Coast. Obviously, after losing Shannon Hearn, they coughed up the last 8 goals of that game. How did you sort of see that one from your point of view? And also the idea of we can put all these numbers in any sort of way we like, but the notion of momentum in sport is something that's still so hard to quantify, and St Kilda obviously had that and West Coast didn't, right?
Yes, no, that's certainly true. I think that the absence of Hearn was the most telling factor in all of that. McGovern was doing his best, but the Hearn's contribution was definitely missed. There wasn't much that West Coast seemed to be able to do. St Kilda truly got a run on, managed to lock the ball in their end of the ground and just kept attacking and attacking. I think it was the first 88 minutes, West Coast scored 81 points, and then in the last 44 it was only 1 point. It didn't make for great reading. It had been a fairly even battle before that with West Coast ahead in most areas, which sort of helped push them out to that 33-point lead. But from that sort of 88-minute mark onwards, it was like it was a different game.
Yeah, quite remarkable. The Eagles have only won 2 quarters after halftime so far this year out of the 8 possible quarters they've had. So certainly something they need to address there. And also, I mean, since 2016, since they made the grand final at the end of 2015, so 2016 onwards, West Coast, they've only made the top 4 in 1 season. Obviously, they cashed in on that one in 2018 and won the grand final. But in 3 of those other seasons, they've fallen just percentage outside the top four. And there typically has been a game or two where they sort of tend to poke themselves in the eye a little bit. Couldn't help but get the feeling that this one might have been that equivalent for this year, but we'll certainly wait and see. And then as far as Freo, yesterday they were very inaccurate, led by Nat Fyfe 0-6, but they did show a bit of guts. They showed some maturity in terms of stemming the tide, stemming a few different pushes from Hawthorn. Some rare numbers from Nat Fyfe, Swamp, 0-6 in front of goal. A bit of a concern for him, slash a great... great sign that he's getting that many shots in front of goal, right?
Yes, I think it'll be interesting to see how that goes in the review, because there is only one worse goal-kicking effort in Fremantle's history, and that was
the coach
Justin Longmuir, who kicked seven behinds in a game once back in, I think it was 2003?
Yeah, 2003, yep.
Yeah, so if one person's going to bring up vision of it, I imagine the other one's going to bring up the vision of the first match.
Yes.
I haven't had a chance to actually watch this match yet because I was working on the Geelong Melbourne game at the same time. But I have had a chance to sort of cast my eye over some of the numbers. Sean Darcy's game looks quite amazing.
Like, yes.
10 contested possessions, 5 contested marks, the 10 hit-outs for advantage and 3 goals. That's rare air for even the best and most well-established ruckman to achieve in a game.
Yeah, very much so. I was going to do a bit of, and we'll do a bit of digging further on Darcy's numbers at the West website this afternoon, but for the 10 hit-outs to advantage in particular from 18 total hit-outs is some sort of incredible efficiency in the ruck before swinging forward and having plenty of efficiency up there. Swamp, before we let you go, mate, we'll throw a couple of these at you. It's a little segment that we like to call Over Under.
Over?
Sure.
Under.
So the first one is, I've got a feeling you'll go under here, but I wanted to have a discussion about it anyway. 99.5 is the number. Most listeners have probably assumed that we're talking about the season's leading goal kicker tally for this one. So will someone crack the 100? Obviously the safe bet says no. Obviously the smart money says no. But I wanted to get your thoughts on how likely you think it might be with Taylor Walker in particular starting so strongly, 20 goals through his first 4 games. I feel like you'll take the under here, but what kind of chance do you feel that 100 could be cracked this year?
Yeah, no, I'm not confident that it would be cracked. I'm under and fairly well under on that number, I'd say.
Sure.
One of the things that the new rules have brought, the standing still on the mark, I think that's actually helped goal kickers more than, I mean, it has opened up play in other parts of the ground, but I think it's taken a bit more pressure off goal kickers. So I'd expect to see the numbers rise slightly, but scoring overall has turned a corner and gone slightly back up from what it's been in the last couple of years, but it hasn't gone gangbusters in the other direction. And given that most years we only sort of see players get to around about that 70, 75 mark, I'd be expecting to see that. So, my best case scenario, I'd say someone might get to 80, but I think 100 is a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, I tend to definitely agree with you there. I mean, just crunching the basic numbers on Taylor Walker, even if we give him a final, if he plays every game from here plus a final, he still needs 80 from 19 games at about 4.2 per game. And given even amid this super hot start, he's only going at 5 a game. Very, very tough to go at 4.2 across the rest of the journey. Other over under that I'll give you is 2.5. And so we're looking at 2.5 teams that will be 6-0 to start the season. So this is looking at the next fortnight for the 3 unbeaten teams, which is the Dogs, Sydney and Melbourne. The Dogs, both the Dogs and Sydney have Gold Coast and GWS over the next fortnight, obviously in differing order. And then Melbourne has Hawthorn followed by Richmond. So you'd suggest that those teams would start favourite in probably all of those games, bar Melbourne v Richmond, depending on how you feel about that and how they're tracking at the time. So 2.5 teams at 6-0. Are you over, under, and also, I was going to look it up and then I thought I'd just ask you, How many times have we seen 3-6-0 teams after the first six rounds of a season?
Okay. Once again, I'm going to go under, and it is that Melbourne-Richmond game.
Yes, that would be the one.
It makes me think. I would love to see it, because if it does happen, it will be the first time it's ever happened.
Fantastic. What's the closest we've been?
We've had a couple of seasons where three teams have gone 5-0. One was 2017, Adelaide, Geelong and Richmond. And from memory, 2013 is the other one as well. But never had three teams go 6-0 in the one season.
Yeah, right. Well, you'd think that we will get to 5-0. You can never predict these upsets, of course, and we saw a few more of those on the weekend. But you'd think we're a really good chance of getting those 3-5-0. And then we'll see what happens in that following week. But you'll take the smart money there and just think Richmond might have too much for Melbourne?
I think Richmond probably will. I do like the Barrack for stats, and that's a good stat, though. So I'll get on the Melbourne bandcamp.
That's excellent, mate. Barracking for stats is certainly something that we can all get behind. Swamp, we'll let you go, mate. Thank you so much for your time. I'm sure there's a lot of people who follow your work on Twitter who wanted to know a bit more about who you are, what you do, how you come up with those sets of numbers. So hopefully we've answered a few questions for some people today and made a few people happy, just like you make plenty of people happy on Twitter and, of course, behind the scenes on the TV broadcast with some of your gold. Thanks so much for joining us, mate.
Cheers, Chris. Appreciate it.
And to our listeners, thank you so much to you. And thank you to our friends at Mazda and the Mazda BT50. It is the complete package. Don't miss the 2-minute warning with Xavier Ellis and co. later this week. And we'll chat to you next Monday.